All right, y'all go ahead and mark your calendars. Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th is the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Y'all have heard us talking about it for years, and it really is. It's the highlight of our summer. We absolutely love that show. We've met so many of you guys at that show over the years, and it is just it's like the perfect environment to go and meet like-minded hunters, hang out, have a good time, and get ready for deer season. So obviously, as the name implies, it is the place to go and try all of the mobile hunting gear coming out right now. We always recommend to people, if you're thinking about getting a new stand, a new sticks, a new saddle, go try it before you buy it. The Mobile Hunters Expo let you try almost all the brands in the mobile hunting space in one spot in one day. There's really nothing like it. So not only do you have all that gear available to you, they also have a great speaker lineup. This year they've got Bobby Worthington, Dylan Harper, Mariah Boggess, Derek Norwood, and BHA all giving presentations where you can go learn from those guys and ask them questions. So if you've heard us talk about the Mobile Hunters Expo for a couple years now and haven't made it out yet, don't let this be another year that you miss it. Y'all come on out. We'll have a great time. We're excited to meet you guys there. We can't wait for it. We'll see y'all there. Again, mark y'all's calendars. It's at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia, Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. See y'all there. All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes, or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com. You know, most hunters don't think about their food plots until it's time to throw down some seed for the fall. And if that's the case, you might be leaving a lot on the table. If you want deer using your plots when season opens, you need to give them a reason to be there all summer long. That's how you build movement patterns. Not hoping for them in October, establish them in June. On top of that, bucks are growing antlers right now. Does are about to be nursing fawns, and your plots can be a real herd health tool during the summer months, not just a hunting tool come fall. Whitetail Hill has a warm season lineup built exactly for this. Summer Bulk is their big warm season forage blend. It grows 4 to 5 feet tall, holds up to browsing pressure way better than something like soybeans, and it'll carry all the way to the first frost. So it doubles down as a early season food plot for us down here in the South. Then if your soil needs a little bit of work first, check out Dirt Doctor. It builds topsoil, breaks up compaction, and gets your plots in shape for a great fall planting. So check out Summer Bulk and Dirt Doctor at whitetailhill.com. Again, that's whitetailhill.com. Now I'm a southern child, down in Macon, Georgia. Everybody knows where I was born. Well, you're listening to the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast.
Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/the Southern Outdoorsman. Now let's get to the episode. All right, welcome back, guys, to another episode of our Listener Success Stories. It's a little, I guess, bonus episode series we are now doing as we're getting these listener success stories coming to us through Instagram and Facebook. And for this week's episode, we actually have a listener on the show, Mr. Perry Bundy from North Carolina. Perry, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Awesome, brother. Well, hey, glad to have you on. Andrew could not join us just because of some technical issues. This hurricane's really put a damper on our setup. It's kind of hard to record when we have power outages, so I'm actually in the mobile hunting, mobile recording studio, aka the Tundra, knocking this podcast out. So hopefully audio sounds pretty good, but yeah, man, there's cables everywhere. But man, Perry, I'm excited to talk to you, man. If anyone's seen the Facebook and Instagram posts, by the time this episode has dropped, they've seen the photos of your buck, but they haven't yet. Man, you killed one excellent, I mean, dude, again, as me and Andrew would say, it is a big rack buck from off the game lands of North Carolina. So congratulations with that. But kind of,
thank you,
dude, to kick us off, I'm excited to hear about your story because it's really interesting, man. A lot of guys that we talk to, you know, just have, you know, years of experience, and you're very different, which is exciting because, yes, you know, having success early on is awesome. But man, the hit is off, Perry. What is your background? How did you get into deer hunting, and how long have you been deer hunting?
So I have not been hunting my entire life. Basically, I just started, well, this year. Last year, I had a buddy at work named Mickey Leopard. He heard me talking about maybe getting some deer meat for the refrigerator, and he had some private property up where he lives, and I said, well, you know, sure, that'd be pretty cool. So we went up there, and he has kind of got a nice little spot. He's cultivated it pretty good. He put me on what I thought was a doe. I shot it, and, you know, when we walked up on it, it was a spike. So that was my first lesson in deer hunting. Then I had another friend reach out to me. He's actually the guy that put me on you guys. His name's Hunter Pegg. His was kind of more residential. We kind of went to like a little cul-de-sac area, and I killed a little button buck last year. I mean, nothing to brag or write home about, but they ate good. And they kind of got me started, kind of getting the flame going. I had fished my entire life. Like, that's what I used to do. I used to fish probably three or four times a week. Used to guide a little bit up here in trout water and things like that. And for whatever reason, last fall, like, my mind just switched, and I wanted to deer hunt. And I got a little bit of acreage behind my house and threw up a trail camera just to see what I could see, and I started seeing deer, and then kind of got the itch to go on game land because I heard it was hard. I heard it was hard, and I heard it was, you know, everybody at work, or you know, I work up in Mitchell County, so where I'm hunting is up in the mountains, and everybody talks about game land because we have a very low deer density up here. I couldn't tell you what it is per square acre, but I know it's low. But the rumor is if you do get a good deer, or if you do the work, there's actually really good deer on public land, and that kind of got me interested. And I just wanted to see if I could do it. My goal for this year was to scout as much land as I possibly could, and maybe by deer season, put myself into like a location or a tree and see a good deer during daylight. I know my interpretation of a good deer and your listeners is going to be completely different because I've seen some of the studs they killed, and I might not see that. So a good deer would just be something that I'd be like, all right, that's a good deer. I mean, it could be 100 inches, 120, doesn't really matter. Just the point that I put myself in a position where I can see them during daylight. To be honest, this time October last year, I had no idea what a rub was. I had no idea what a scrape was. I could kind of tell you what a deer trail was, but other than that, I literally had no idea what I was doing. Some of the things that I do have in my favor, though, was I got a little bit of military background, and I can read the topo map pretty good. So I can read and kind of identify some of the spots on the map that you guys talked about so much, you know, benches, saddles. I understand that lingo, and I can look at a topo map and kind of tell what you guys are talking about. So as time went on and I scouted further and further into game land, you know, I would be like, all right, well, this is a saddle. They say, you know, deer should travel here or this terrain edge here, because I look on Google Earth and I see where a fire had happened or some type of there's a difference. So you got a terrain edge. So maybe go take a look at that. And just since January, really, I started scouting game land, and I would just mark off areas that didn't have it, or I would drop pins that had deer activity. And I had some really good mentors, dudes I worked with and some friends, you know, that I could bounce ideas off of. And, you know, there's one guy at work, his name's Jay Barnett. He probably got sick and tired of me sending them photos because, you know, I got out in the woods like January and I see a rub on a tree. I'm like, hey, man, look at this rub. And he's like, dude, that's a woodpecker. That's a rotten tree. You know, you're an idiot. So that kind of happened. And just things like that, man. And just getting out and beating feet, really.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing is your story, you know, is different from a lot of other guys that we've talked to. And that's one thing when you wrote your listener success story to us and just said, you know, hey, guys, thanks for the podcast and everything else. And I was asking you some questions about it. It was just fascinating because with your lack of just years experience, how much you were able to pack into literally in just a matter of months, you know, after that first season to get yourself prepared for this season and go out and kill a really good deer. I mean, a big deer. Like I said earlier, it's a big rat buck, dude.
I appreciate it.
And I think you were talking about earlier, it's a 12 point, and this is a fantastic buck. And especially, you know, being your first rack deer that you kill, being something of that caliber, coming off game land, public land, in North Carolina, in an area, like you said, that has low deer numbers, you know, it's not like you just lucked into that. And we're going to get down into, you know, breaking down this hunt because yes, the story is really fascinating, really interesting. Again, a guy like yourself who, you know, have like the military background, so you kind of using maps to your advantage and understanding how to read, you know, topo maps and kind of seeing aerial maps, but mm-hmm. putting the woodsmanship into learning sign and understanding sign along with trail camera use allowed you to kill that deer, which is, I mean, just awesome. I mean, it's making the luck for you, and that's exactly what it sounded like you did. You didn't just sit somewhere, you know, hoping a deer was going to come by. You had an idea of what was going to happen, and we're about to break that down. And I hope there's listeners out there, and we have had a lot of guys reach out to us that are very new into deer hunting. And hopefully your story can resonate with them and they can maybe learn from what you personally have gone through to maybe go out and have success themselves. Because it's just exciting to see guys like yourself go out there, have success, not even just have success killing deer, but kill really good deer, and can hopefully now you can map this out in the future of how to continue to grow off what you've learned in the last few months, which is fantastic. And I want to ask, Perry, to kind of jump us into this, you know, what were some of the episodes from the show that kind of hit home for you that you could kind of start using along with like your mentors and everything else to start applying mm-hmm. to where you're hunting out there in North Carolina?
So, So one of the benefits of y'all's podcast is you guys talk to guys who actually hunt areas like me, the Appalachian Mountains. I'm hunting between 25 and 35, 100 feet elevation. Rhododendron thickets, laurel thickets, just god awful stuff. And if how I learned, you know, the scrapes and stuff like that was not only like people talking to me, but like your podcast and like the Hunting Public and Catman. And I binged all that. Like I was a sponge. I listened. I paid attention, and I tried to, like, if one thing Catman talked about was like acorns, for example, how you could see the notch in the acorns. Nobody had ever taught me that. So whenever I seen, you know, oaks dropping, I would look and say, well, there's a notch. That's what he's talking about. Or like, I forget who it is. I think it was either Nathan or the other guy who was talking about laurel thickets and how you need to tuck up into the laurel thickets and pay attention to the laurel thickets. I wasted a lot of time earlier in the season kind of slapping up cameras in hardwoods with those trails and stuff. And when I heard that podcast, I needed to tuck up into them rhododendrons and actually pay attention to like the thick stuff as opposed to, you know, the wide open stuff. I started seeing a little bit more deer on trail cameras. There was another person on his podcast. I forget the names. I'm really bad with names, but he was talking about having, whenever he puts a camera on a scrape, he'll put it in video mode. And for this 12 point, it was super helpful because it would show me exactly what direction he walked in, what direction he walked off, and which kind of way he was going. And I was able to pattern him from that. I had photos of him coming in to eat acorns. And then I could pretty much track where he went. And then right before daybreak, I would see him hit the scrape and kind of go off into the laurel. So I started to develop a pattern with him and kind of put a plan in place. And it all worked out pretty well.
Yeah, to kind of back up a little bit, you know, coming into your first full season, you know, kind of getting more well-equipped, you know, having more knowledge under your belt just from what you've kind of, you know, just kind of surrounded yourself by over the last, you know, 6, 8, 9 months, as long as you've been trying to find this information and trying to learn from it, from all the different sources. You know, when it comes to applying it out there, first off, what was some of the things you were having challenges with, you know, being a newer hunter, trying to go out there and find the sign and figure out, you know, in an area that you talk about having low deer numbers, trying to find an area that was actually holding deer? And what were some of those distractions you were kind of following yourself, you know, falling into, really?
Man, what sucked is, like, since I'm a new hunter and I don't really have any experience out in the woods, like, the chunk of public land that I hunt is massive. Like, it's pretty big. So just a starting point, like, where do you start? All right, so what do I look for? So I listen to your podcast, kind of bounce off some other ideas off some of the dudes I work with at work. Give me just a couple checkpoints that I can kind of look at. So I'll look at the topo map. I'll drop a pin. I'll be like, all right, I need to take a look here, like saddles or benches or anything different. And I'll kind of cross-check that on Google Earth and see, like, well, is there some type of difference in terrain? Do I have hardwoods going into spruce or hemlock or rhododendron and it goes into hardwoods? I might need to take a look at this. So those are kind of the things that I started keying into. As far as like the frustrating stuff, earlier on, like January, February, I'd found some scrapes. A dude that works with me, I brought him out and I was like, is this a scrape? And he said, yeah, that's a scrape, or no, that's not a scrape. So whenever he showed me that, yes, that was indeed a scrape, I'd put up a camera and kind of take a look at it. And, you know, I was thinking I was the best hunter alive, but in all reality, you know, they were coming in at like 3 o'clock in the morning, which means they're nowhere close. And you guys kind of helped me with that because, you know, nighttime sign. I would not have known that had I not paid attention to y'all or, you know, a couple of the other dudes that I follow, but that was pretty important. And just having good mentors, just people that you know you can talk to about it. Like, there's an old man at work, his name's Tim Beaver. He's killed a whole lot of deer. And I'd pull up my topo map, and I'm like, I think this would be a pretty good spot. And he'd be like, you know, he kind of sigh and move my finger over a little bit and drop a penny, so you should check this out. And then, you know, we just did that for couple weeks, couple months, and then started actually finding deer.
Well, so you started scouting this summer, I'm guessing, correct? You started just running trail cameras. How did you start applying trail cameras out there? What were you focusing on, you know, kind of being a newer, you know, newer at this? Okay. And then how did you transition to actually locating that buck?
Okay, so the most obvious thing for me, because I don't know what I'm doing, is the easiest thing for me to find was scrapes. So if I found a scrape and it looked like a good scrape, and there was a lot of deer trails around it, like I forget who it was who was talking about the wheel and then the hub, and you had trails going in. If I found that, I'd put up a camera and I'd kind of see what's in there. And if it wasn't anything that I was really interested in, because my whole goal was to lock down a good buck on public land, and I think I would do something, or I think that I would have accomplished something. So I marked off a lot of land that I just call like a dead area. Now they might have like little sixes, little fours. I was looking for a mature deer. That's all I wanted to see. It was just a mature deer in daylight to get myself in position. So I would check these ridges. I would check the finger ridges. I would check, you know, breaks in laurel and stuff like that. And I just marked off, I crossed off a lot of land. It's probably been, if it's not every weekend, then it's every other weekend. I've been out scouting just different game lands around, trying to find the best sign, because, you know, your listeners will probably laugh at me, but if it's not super obvious, then I'm not going to see it. So one of the things that a couple of your guests have had on talk about feed trees and how you'll know whenever you find a feed tree, like especially with low deer population. So I found a couple. I found this flat area on top of a ridge, and it was like no joke. It looked like someone had plowed through it. It's like a 40 to 50 yard like little square, and it's basically the only opening in this rhododendron thicket. And this is like really old rhododendron, like, you know, about as big as your thigh at the base, and it just kind of branches out. And it's got some trails that cut through it, so it is walkable. It's not like a true thicket. Dudes that hunt up here will know what I'm talking about, but, you know, it was the only opening, and there was just so much deer sign. Even a dummy like me can see, like, there are deer in here. So I was kind of looking around in that area. I put up a camera on the tree with the most sign, and then I just kind of walked around and zigzagged my way through and found a deer trail that went to this just gigantic laurel, or not laurel, but rhododendron. And it had what appeared to be a fresh grape. this was like mid-August, and it was already like urine in the scrape. So I went ahead and put up a camera on that one too, and then went about my merry way and checked it about 2 weeks later. where I went up and got to the flat, right basically on the path that I take to get up there, there was a gigantic grub. It was probably from my knee to my lower rib. And it was huge. And I said, okay, I might have something. So I didn't hunt that area that day. I kind of went around somewhere else and hunted, switched out the trail, the cards, left the trail cameras, and then went home. And then that night I seen the 12. And I thought, oh boy, I've got something here.
Yeah, so you checked trail cameras, and again, you kind of had two different cameras, one set up more so like on that feeding flat where, you know, there's oaks, yep, and stuff they're feeding on, the other camera being adjacent to it, kind of going towards the rhododendron kind of thicket, you, yep, know, where they're kind of going back through some cover. When you got him on camera at the time, which, you know, y'all season normally comes in like on the 10th of September, is that correct, or a little bit later than that?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure. I think it's like the second Saturday or something.
Yeah. So, you know, early to mid-September season kind of comes, yeah, in. When you're checking cameras, that time span that he was coming through there, you know, was that this like late October or late August time span, or was that a little bit into September?
So I had him eating acorns. I think it was like the last week of August. I've got a photo of him just kind of mulling around eating acorns. As far as the scrape, I think he started hitting the scrape late first weekend of the second week of September. It was kind of surprising to me about them actually paying attention to the scrapes. So that was something that was kind of surprising, because I figured it would be a little bit later on, but they were hitting it. I've got a video of it.
Well, okay. So you had him on two different cameras, you know, in this one mm-hmm. area, so you had a pattern on him. What were you learning from, you know, how he was coming into those spots from your, you know, cameras, both on video and also on just photo mode?
Okay. So the Akron flat was probably maybe 60 to 70 yards away from the scrape. I would get him coming into the acorns right at dusk, and then basically right before sunup, maybe 30 minutes to an hour before sunup, he'll come and freshen up the scrape. He would hit the licking branch, he would kind of kick a little bit, and then, you know, just kind of walk off. But I could tell, you know, what direction he was going off the scrape and kind of his general area and what trail he was taking off that scrape. So that kind of helped too.
So you get this information and you kind of get this, you know, realization that this deer's coming through there. Is he working that area when you were checking that first camera pull? Was he working the area during daylight hours? Or actually, well, you just answered that. No, you were saying he was coming through feeding in the evening in that one spot on, by the feed trees, and then coming by the scrape, you know, right before sun up. So, okay. At what point did you decide, let me go try to kill this deer and play a move on him? And what did you get him on the first trip in, or did it take a couple trips before you actually got him?
Well, in all honesty, that was I'd say it was my first time hunting that area. What I was trying to do, instead of hunting a specific deer, because I really thought that I had no shot at that 12. So what I did is I have several in that location. I had several shooter deer, what I would consider a shooter deer, that 12 being the top. Had like a crab claw 9 and then a pretty wide 8. And any of those three, you know, I'd been perfectly tickle pink with. So I wasn't specifically hunting that deer. And the game plan that I came up with was to put myself into the best position to see, you know, one of those three deer. And basically it was the best weekend I had. You know, it was a little bit of a cold front moving through. It was the first real cold front we had up here, and it was a new moon. You know, some of the boys at work were talking about new moons not being so great to hunt, but, you know, you look on the internet, and they'll be like, new moon's great, new moon's terrible, so it all depends. It's whatever, but I kind of took that one guy's mentality. I forget who he was, but he said, you know, if I have an opportunity to hunt, I'm going to go in there and make the wind work for me. So this location from the parking lot is like 4.3 miles GPS. So when I make the decision to go in there, I'm just going to make the wind work for me, because the wind's going to do whatever it does on the mountain. I don't fully understand thermals. I don't fully understand all that type of stuff, but I do know that whenever I did get up to the flat, the wind was going straight up the mountain. So this oak flat that I'd planned on hunting, this was Saturday. There was a cold front moving in. It was a new moon. I got in there around 1 o'clock because I didn't want to bump him out, because, you know, you're moving into his feeding area. I didn't want to bump him out that morning because I'd basically have to walk right past the scrape to get to that feeding area. So I kind of took a risk there. And the second risk I took was my setup. So if you can think of a square, I put my tree stand, my little saddle up in the top left corner of that square, the square being the oak flat. All around that square, in any direction, could be potential bedding because it is absolutely thick and nasty rhododendron. So the plan that I made whenever I got up to the crest of the ridge was I'm gonna sacrifice that back corner. So I'm going to go up to that back corner, have my wind blowing straight up the mountain, and just sacrifice the rhododendrons behind me, and hopefully I'll get them or another deer coming into these acorns where I've had them on camera, you know, coming in right at dusk. So that was kind of the risk that I took.
So you go in with that mindset, and you said this is over 4 miles back there?
It's 4.3 GPS.
Oh, man.
I can send you the Garmin. So. Dude. You don't believe it. I got GPS for it.
Oh, man. So anyone that's listened to the show, by the way, this is a little segue, and we're going to get back to this. If you're not on the Running Gun Whitetail Hunters page, it's a group that me and Andrew have run for a few years now, but shared on there, it was a meme from Timber Ninja Stand Company. and they had a meme talking about when you kill, you know, when you knock down a good buck, you know, over 4 miles in, and it's that the meme of that cat, you know, with a wild eye on its face, and it's like it's a military scene from like the Vietnam War, and and I'm like, dude,
well, we'll get to that because I had that
moment. I was gonna say, yeah, the realization when you have to know you have to get them out. And I'm like, dude, 4+ miles. That is no freaking joke. But anyways, we're about to get to that. But okay, yes, so sir. You go to the spot.
Yes,
you know, you have the wherewithal to understand that, you know, all this whole area, talking like this square, the way you described it, you know, there's bedding everywhere, but you're going to sacrifice a corner of it with the wind when you get to it, just so you could have, you know, the other quote unquote kind of four corners to your advantage.
Yeah.
You get set up, you know, early afternoon, and kind of just walk us through the hunt, like, you know, what kind of happened, how did it break down?
So y'all talk about terrain edges all the time. Well, I got a wicked terrain edge. So you have hardwoods like red oaks, white oaks, and I think chestnut oaks. Somebody can go up there and say, and they'll probably be like, you're a dummy. You know, that's not – I know white oak and I know red oak and I know some gigantic acorn that was fallen. But it's an incredible terrain edge because all around that oak flat is just that thick, nasty laurel. Anyway – I go ahead and I climb up into the tree. I can see, like, in front of me from the saddle, I've got the majority of the oak flat that I can see. I've got trails coming into from my right out of the laurel and kind of just scrub bush. I don't know what it's called, but it's just some thick, nasty crap. So as I'm sitting there in the saddle, it's probably 3 o'clock whenever I get in there, 4 o'clock. A little yearling bear comes through, and he's stuffing his face with some acorns, and, you know, that's pretty cool to watch. And I'm sitting in my saddle, and I kind of your listeners are going to laugh, but I was sitting in like a 7-year-old in a tire swing, and I was just kind of swinging back and forth. And I heard some movement behind me, you know, so I kind of look behind me, and I'm looking in this thick laurel that's directly behind me, and all of a sudden I see the back end of a deer, and I think, good grief, that's a huge deer. So I went ahead and I grabbed my crossbow. Before your listeners judge me, I do shoot a crossbow because I did not have time to learn how to bow hunt. That was one of the things I kind of decided was I don't want to make a bad shot with a bow. I know how to shoot a rifle, so the crossbow kind of transitions well, and I just decided this year I'll shoot a crossbow until I actually learn how to shoot a bow.
Oh, yeah, listen, on that segue, dude, I have absolutely no issues with crossbows. I know there's other guys out there that do, and that's, you know, everyone can have their own opinion. My thing, especially for a new hunter, it gets you out there where you can you can set the house, you can practice shooting, you get consistent with it, and then it's just one less thing you have to worry about while you're out there. And again, as long as you're willing to carry one in the woods, I mean, have fun with it. that's one thing I was going to ask actually earlier on, because I knew you killed this during archery season, is whether or not you were able to actually learn to shoot a bow in that short time span. But again, you know, be able to have a crossbow and be able to go out there and have those opportunities, I mean, that's just awesome because it opens up more opportunities for you and be able to, you know, hunt more ethically than, you know, maybe getting a bow and, you know, coming apart and, you know, wounding a deer.
Yeah, that was kind of my whole reasoning behind it, because I did not have the time to dedicate to being an archer, you know, and my whole thing is I want to make an ethical shot. I want it to drop. So I decided, you know, I'll go ahead and get the crossbow, and I'm still not 100% sure, like, this is going to be my thing. So I didn't spend a lot of money on this crossbow. Crossbow is like the base model PSE. It's a coalition. It's like $300. So I went ahead and I grabbed my crossbow. Kind of going back to the story now, I just see this back half. There's one opening directly behind me. So as I spin around in my saddle, my back's up against the tree where my platform is. And I'm looking directly into a rhododendron thicket. And he steps out and I see his horns. And I'm like, okay, that's a shooter. You know, I'm going to go ahead and take a shot on this if I'm able. So I look up above my scope and make sure I got a good shooting lane. I go back down, and as soon as I put the crosshairs on his shoulder, like, I see him doing the head bob that they do whenever they see it. So I'm like, ah, crap, man, he's on me. And then I feel the wind on the back of my neck. So I'm like, I have to make this shot now. So I go ahead, I make a good shot. I pull the trigger. I hear that with the hunting public always talk about that drum sound, and I see him mule kick. Well, I made two mistakes here. First mistake is I did not pay close enough attention to when he was running. So all the new hunters that are listening, like, when you take that shot, pay attention to where he's running. And also know that whenever you get down out of that tree stand, everything's going to look different.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to follow him about 15 yards before he just disappeared in Laurel. I could hear him running maybe 40, 50 yards, and then I heard absolutely nothing. So I was like, all right, here we go. I did it, celebration mode. I know that everybody says you're supposed to wait like 30, 40 minutes before you go out of the tree and check the bolt. I probably waited like 15. I couldn't stand it. I was vibrating. I just knew that whenever – I was like, here we go. So as soon as I walk down, I'm expecting to see my bolt covered in blood. I'm expecting to see a blood trail. I'm expecting to walk 40, 50 yards and see this whatever deer I shot, just laying there dead. Beautiful. Well, that is not what happened. So whenever I got out of the tree, I walked to the spot that I thought I shot, and I started looking, and I was like, I have no idea if this is where I shot. So I looked up at the saddle because my stuff's still in the tree, my backpack and everything else is still up in the tree. And I'm kind of looking at the tree, looking at the spot, looking at the tree, looking at the spot. So I think that I found the area, but I'm not finding the bolt. I'm not finding a speck of blood. I'm like, holy crap, man, did I miss it? So I probably kick. I'm kicking up leaves. I'm kicking up roots. I'm kicking stumps out of the way. I'm looking for this bolt with everything I got because I shot the deer at 5:45. Sunlight's starting to fade now. I'm not finding any blood. And the realization of just how far I am and how little I know is starting to set in. So I'm looking around, and I cannot find blood. I can't find nothing. And it's starting to bother me a little bit. I make a phone call. I call a couple of my friends. I'm like, hey, the guys that actually hunt. One was Mickey. And I was sending him texts because he was hunting too. I was like, hey, man, here's what happened. I saw him mule kick. It sounded like a good shot. He's like, well, did it run uphill or did it run downhill? And I said, well, it ran uphill because it was a slight incline. And he's like, oh, no, man, that's a bad sign. So then that's in my head too. So I drop a pin to where I shot him. I drop a pin to my tree stand. I call my buddy that lives close to me, Cliff Johnson. I say, hey, man, I know it's about dark. I think I shot a good deer. About 90% sure I hit him. I can't find blood. I can't find the bolt. Can't find nothing. And you can tell he's like a little bit hesitant on, coming out and helping me find it because we're so far back, and especially, it's going to be nighttime. So he agrees to it. He just says, hey, just, take your tree stand down, take your saddle down, pack all that crap out of there. I'll meet you at the car and then we'll walk in because, he doesn't have the faintest idea where I'm at. So I'm going to have to pack all my stuff 4.3 miles back down to the car and then walk all the way back up. And my biggest fear is he's going to walk up here and immediately find the bolt with absolutely no blood. And, it was a roller coaster, man. So the highest of highs when I shoot the deer and then the lowest of lows when I can't find blood. So I'm like, all right, man, that's what we'll do. I'll meet you in about 2.5 hours. So it's going to take me 2.5 hours to get down to you. So I pack all my stuff in my pack, tighten everything up. It's pitch black now because, like I said, it was a new moon. Walking out of the Laurel rhododendron thicket, just pitch black. I'm mad. I think that I've, ruined everything. And I get to the path that I've walked up, and I take a look with my headlamp up that path to make sure – in all honesty, just make sure no bears are coming or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I look up at the path and I see eyes shining at me. And I see a huge rack and I'm like, here we go. And I run up to it and it's a 12. I had no idea it was a 12 when I pulled the trigger. Everybody in a 10-mile radius heard me yell. it was just a it was a good time, man.
Oh, so wait, so you go back? You're kind of busting back through like the road engine and
yes, sir.
The mountain laurel. You pop out on the trail, and that deer's dead laying there.
That deer is dead laying there, 5 feet from the trail. So he died 5 feet from the trail that I walked in on.
So man, how far did he go from where you shot him?
Rough guess. He kind of made a loop. We're guessing like 70 yards. I double lunged him. But what happened was is whenever I shot, since there was a slight incline, it was a 32-yard shot. I double lunged him. But I guess where it was just like level with the cavity, his cavity had to fill with the blood. Mm-hmm. So he left not a drop of blood, man. And you want to talk about a bad feeling when you're not finding blood and you're that far back and you think you got a deer on the ground, but you don't know. God, it sucked. But I got lucky. I got lucky that he died right beside the trail, or else it would have been a really long night.
Listen, I'm thinking here. I'm like, dude, when you were telling me that and you were about to walk on the trail, I'm like, this dude's about to do 16 miles to get this deer out because over four in, over four back, going four more in, and then four more back. I'm like, dude, listen. All right.
Well,
this is a heck of a story so far.
at 4:30 in the morning, whenever we made it back to the car, I'd done 21 miles. So, and I got photos. I'll send it to you all the time. That's no joke. That's Garmin. So, it was a long night, man.
Well, so let's talk about this because I'm just interested in how. Again, you're a new hunter, dude. You have the confidence slash just I'm gonna say the boldness, dude, to get that far from the road to find the sign, which is awesome. You get a deer down. What is running through your mind? You got the deer down. Now how are you planning on getting a deer out of there? Being that far
that's
in?
whenever I had to rely on my friends with a little bit more experience, because at this point in time I have really no idea how to cape this thing. I have no idea how to. I can get the back straps, but as far as like the hams and the shoulder and everything else, I ain't got the first clue. So this is whenever I have to call up those friends, you know, that, hey, getting your phone call, but we'll do whatever you need. And you got a handful of them. Yeah, I'm guessing you got them, and I've got them too. And I have two buddies like that. And one's Cliff Johnson, one's Ryan Jacobs, and they both came up and they both helped me with it. Because if I didn't have them, I don't know what I would do.
Well, that's so. Did y'all just pretty much just pack them out?
Yes, sir. So I skipped down the mountain. I don't feel any tiredness or nothing. I'm skipping down the mountain, just as happy as can be, you know. And skip down the mountain, get to the parking lot, meet my buddies. You know, we're both of them don't believe that I shot the deer. I show them a photo, and they start believing. But take about a 15-minute break. I'm a little bit tired and I need a little bit of water because I'm out of water. So we go back up the mountain. They're pretty good, man. One brought a bow saw. If you're backpacking, you've got a buddy that'll bring a bow saw. I mean, that's pretty awesome. So we took the back hams. We took the tenderloin. My buddy took the heart. We got the back straps off of them and caped them out.
Awesome. So y'all able to get the meat, pack them out, and get them back. Dude, that's a crazy night. And you said you were finally back at the truck with him at 4:30 in the morning?
I think it was between 4:15 and 4:30, and I took the shot at 5:45 the day before.
Man, you get some good friends. Night. Yeah, you get some good friends, I'll tell you that, man. especially if they're willing to suffer, you know, with you through that whole experience. But that's awesome. I mean, you talk about like a memorable hunt for your first rack deer, and not only just a rack deer, but like a freaking big deer, dude.
I had no idea that it was a 12. I saw a rack and I identified him as a shooter. He impressed me. I didn't care that he was a 12 or not. He was just an impressive deer, and I was proud of him. So that's why I took the shot.
Oh, man, that's awesome. So, you know, from that whole experience and everything, what have you learned from that? What can you kind of apply now from, again, you know, stuff that you've heard from other guys talk about, stuff that you personally learned? You know, how are you going to use what you've learned to kind of apply now for the rest of the season, but also maybe going into next year?
That's a good question. Let me think. From everything that I learned from that experience, as soon as you take the shot, you need to have a little bit of restraint and a little bit of, I guess it's calm, to really pay attention to where that deer runs, because it is an absolutely terrible feeling to get down to where that deer is, and you kind of know the direction, but then you actually, I mean, in all honesty, I had no idea where that deer went. As soon as I shot him, I had no idea. So the next time that I go, and if I'm lucky enough to take another shot on the deer, I need to pay attention to where that deer runs. Let's see. Maybe another thing that I would correct for the next time is do like a loom. Was it a luminock?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like
where
a
I can actually
a yeah. lighted knock on your bolt.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A lighted knock on the bolt. Because I couldn't see the bolt whenever it hit. I heard it hit, but I wasn't 100% confident that I hit. I was like 90% sure, but I wasn't all the way. So a lighted knock. Pay attention to where the deer runs. Give it time. I know I was up in the stand, I was vibrating. I just give it time, because if it hadn't been such a good shot, I could have potentially bumped that deer, and I could have turned it into an excessively long night. Let's see. Another thing. I guess going back to the, like, you said something about, you know, new hunters listening to this. Just don't be afraid to walk. Don't be afraid to fail. And just keep looking for the good sign. I mean, that's what I did. And I'm not a smart guy, and I'm not really a huge outdoorsman, but I was willing to walk, and I was willing to listen to people who know what they're talking about. You have to filter out a lot of the people who will give you advice, and they're not really who you need to pay attention to. So if you can filter out a little bit of the bad advice, focus in on the people who are actually willing to help you and listen to what they have to say, I think it goes a long way. That's, I mean, I would have been able to kill that deer without, you know, podcasts like yours or some of the dudes at work that pointed me in the right direction.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. You know, to be honest, that's really been the goal with our show is to, you know, interview guys that are going to be relatable to people across the Southeast, but really across the country, no matter the experience, whether it's somebody that's been hunting for 45 years or somebody like yourself that literally just got into it like a year ago. That is awesome. And just to be able to see how you were able to pick up on certain things, apply, you know, some of your background being in the military from map reading, and just having the boldness to go out there and look for the sign and just be willing to learn is exciting, because again, there's, I have no issue. And if a guy has private land to hunt on, that is awesome. But a lot of guys I see that get into deer hunting that hunt private land, especially in states that can bait, they get a totally different experience. And a lot of those people, they might kill a couple of deer, but they don't stick with it just because they don't see any challenge with it. There's no real kind of passion behind it other than just sitting on a green field or sitting on, you know, a bait pile where yeah. you're going out there, you're putting in the work and you're getting rewarded on it. You know, one reward that I think a lot of people don't think about is when you put in the effort to run trail cameras and you find a good deer or a big deer like what you've done on trail camera, that is rewarding. And then you get the reward of trying to piece apart on how you are going to try to kill one of those deer that you've got on camera, or kill a deer that's in the area that's leaving down a lot of big sign. We've got an episode coming out. We're recording this the night before this drops, but we got an episode coming out this Monday that I think will really speak to you, along with a lot of other guys on the podcast. I think a lot of people are going to listen to Monday's episode, is really going to like it. But understanding how, you know, sign truly dictates where to hunt and how to hunt, especially in areas that you can't just run trail cameras, and how you can kind of find those quality deer. So it sounds like it's really clicked with you, even though, again, the experience that you have is limited, but you're learning very, very quickly, which is exciting. It's exciting from my standpoint, because I like seeing guys like yourself go out there, have success, and dude, to be honest, kill some deer that I myself am jealous about, my man.
Well, I do appreciate that, man. And I appreciate you inviting the dudes that hunt the mountains, because that's, you can watch the Hunting Public, you can watch all those other type of YouTube videos or podcasts, and they do not talk about that. And that was the first time that I heard somebody talking about woods that I know, you know, like 25, 35, 45,000 feet elevation. Like, he's talking about laurel thicks. I know what a laurel, I know what a rhododendron is. Whenever that guy talked about, he said like 100 acres worth of rhododendron thickets. Like, I've been in those. So that was cool, because he spoke to me, and I appreciate you you know, going outside of Alabama and coming up to like Virginia and North Carolina and interviewing some of those guys, because if it hadn't been for them guys telling me about, you know, red engine tickets, I'd have completely probably, I would have probably completely overlooked them. So,
well, that's awesome. Well, again, Perry, maybe just kind of wrap us up, you know, from what you've kind of learned from the podcast and learning in kind of in person while out in the woods, what advice would you give to a new listener, you know, not a new listener, but like a new hunter that might be listening to this episode? Again, a guy maybe has been only doing this for a few months, if maybe a year or two. What advice would you give them to maybe so they can learn a little bit quicker and kind of pick up on some of the things that you picked up on?
Okay. So first off, get in the woods. That's the biggest thing. You need to get in the woods. You need to spend time in the woods. You can't kill them from the couch. That's what Tim Beaver always told me. He's the old timer that I talk to at work and bounce ideas off of. You can't kill him from the couch. You got to get in the woods. The more you're in the woods, the more you're going to start picking up on stuff. Also, you need to find you a couple good mentors, people that will walk through the woods with you and show you signs, especially as a new hunter, because like I said, you know, about an hour ago, this time last year, I had no idea what a rub was, had no idea what a scrape was. But I did have some good friends that are good hunters. You know, Jake Barnett, Brett Hardis, Mickey Ledford. These guys kind of walked in the woods with me and pointed stuff out. Or I would walk in front of them and be like, is this a rub? Is this a scrape? Is this a deer trail? And that would validate that. When they validate that, it gives you a little bit more self-confidence in it. So find you some good mentors that know what they're talking about and listen to them. Just be a sponge. Listen to them. Listen to what they say. Go out, try to find it yourself.
Awesome. Awesome, dude. Well, Perry, man, I appreciate you coming on, dude. Congratulations on an awesome buck, and best of luck to you for the rest of the season. By the way, is North Carolina a one-buck or two-buck state?
Two
bucks.
So hopefully you guys will get another photo here pretty soon.
Awesome, dude. Well, hey, again, congratulations. Thanks again. And everybody's listening to the podcast, make sure you tune in for Monday's episode. We have a unbelievable episode on Monday. That's going to be dropping, so stay tuned for that as well. And by the time you hear Monday's episode, we will be out hunting in Wyoming, hopefully with a big whitetail or mule deer down the ground by then. But until next time, guys, thanks again for tuning to the episode. We'll see you back on Monday. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman. And thank you to Blackberry Smoke for the music for the podcast. Also, to follow along with us, make sure you check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And if you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/the Southern Outdoorsman. Until next time, y'all stay Southern.
All right, y'all go ahead and mark your calendars. Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th is the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Y'all have heard us talking about it for years, and it really is. It's the highlight of our summer. We absolutely love that show. We've met so many of you guys at that show over the years, and it is just it's like the perfect environment to go and meet like-minded hunters, hang out, have a good time, and get ready for deer season. So obviously, as the name implies, it is the place to go and try all of the mobile hunting gear coming out right now. We always recommend to people, if you're thinking about getting a new stand, a new sticks, a new saddle, go try it before you buy it. The Mobile Hunters Expo let you try almost all the brands in the mobile hunting space in one spot in one day. There's really nothing like it. So not only do you have all that gear available to you, they also have a great speaker lineup. This year they've got Bobby Worthington, Dylan Harper, Mariah Boggess, Derek Norwood, and BHA all giving presentations where you can go learn from those guys and ask them questions. So if you've heard us talk about the Mobile Hunters Expo for a couple years now and haven't made it out yet, don't let this be another year that you miss it. Y'all come on out. We'll have a great time. We're excited to meet you guys there. We can't wait for it. We'll see y'all there. Again, mark y'all's calendars. It's at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia, Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. See y'all there. All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find basher groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes, or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.